This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Pacifica National Affairs analyst Larry Binsky has followed the politics of U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone over the years, and we spoke with him earlier today.
It's a sad day for the progressive community. It's a sad day for the United States. This was a very unusual man. We don't often get people who run for the United States Senate because they have developed political theories on the progressive side of the spectrum and then decided to put them into practice. And that's what Senator Paul Wellstone did. He was a political science professor for over 20 years at Carleton College, a small liberal arts college in Minnesota. And one of the courses he taught there was called Social Movements and Grassroots Organizing. And when he sensed a great deal of discontent with the incumbent Republican Senator Rudy Boschwitz in the 1980s among the progressive community and the liberals in Minnesota for Boschwitz's strong support for the Contras and for his being very involved in major corporate interests who supported his campaign with a lot of money, Wellstone decided to run himself as an example of social movements and grassroots organizing. And he famously campaigned around the state of Minnesota in a battered green school bus, frequently appearing with just one or two people by his side, and talked to people all over the state. And to many people's amazement, he won election to the Senate in that race in 1990. He was reelected once, and he was running, of course, for reelection again in the upcoming November 5th election.
And what can you share with us about the politics of Senator Wellstone once he was elected?
Well, Senator Wellstone was very much on the side of the oppressed and the disadvantaged in this country. He was always looking to help people with health care, with education issues. Mental health was one of his big issues, trying to equalize the care and the provisions of the federal government for mental health with physical health. He was very strong on environmental issues. He had a great deal to say and tried to do about domestic violence issues. And he was one of the foremost people in the United States Senate working against the what you could call modern imperialist policies of what has come to be crystallized in the Bush administration. He was one of just six incumbent Democratic senators who have close races this time, for example, to vote against the Bush administration's request for unlimited powers in Iraq the other day. And that, of course, didn't necessarily work against him in a state like Minnesota, which has a tradition of political eccentricity, as witnessed the election of Governor Jesse Ventura. But it was considered by many people a courageous thing to do. Wellstone was in a very close race for reelection on November 5th.
Mm. How might the politics in the Senate be influenced with the absence of the voice of Senator Wellstone?
The voice of Senator Wellstone will be missed, of course, because he was one of the few places progressives could go to try to get their issues heard. But more and equally to that will be his vote as a Democrat. The Senate now is essentially tied again, and the tie-breaking vote is cast by the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney. So with the death of Senator Wellstone, we automatically pass on Capitol Hill to the Republicans having control of both houses of the legislature again. And in an eerie parallel here, Verna, the election on November 5th in Missouri, which is basically an election for the Senate seat that Jean Carnahan was given by the governor of Missouri after her husband died in a plane crash while campaigning 2 years ago, just as Senator Wellstone has died today. That election in Missouri, should Senator Carnahan lose to Jim Talent, Jim Talent immediately gets to take the Senate seat. He doesn't have to wait for inauguration in January. So the Republicans, many people were speculating, would have had that tie anyway, should Carnahan lose to Talent in Missouri on November 5th. Of course, the November 5th election has many other seats, and should the Democrats get themselves some breathing space with a margin of one or two or three votes or more, all of this just means that in Senator Wellstone's absence for the next couple of months and the possible election of Jim Talent, who gets seated immediately, the Republicans would have 2 months to try to do whatever they wanted to do. But the Senate, the magic number in the Senate is not 51 votes so much as it's 60, as you know, the votes necessary to cut off a filibuster And it's for sure that the Democrats would be united against any extreme actions that the Bush administration tried to take should they try to get electoral advantage from today's tragedy. He had tremendous amounts of integrity. This is not to say that people, including progressives in Minnesota, did not have quarrels with him about various votes that he cast, including in favor of the Gulf War resolution, if memory serves, back when he was first elected. This inevitably happens when someone's elected. They don't remain completely pure to their purposes, and so it's very difficult for them to retain the support of their supporters. But even among the progressive community of Minnesota, which argued with him from time to time about various issues, I think the mood today will be one of tremendous mourning and loss.
Okay. Larry, any final thoughts on your part?
It's just very sad to have to contemplate a man who was only 58 years old having his political career come to an end like this. I thought he was going to win on November 5th. I think the people of Minnesota understood what's at stake in giving the Republicans a blank check and controlling both houses of Congress. It looks like they're going to do quite well on the House side, and the Senate side was the Democrats' only chance of perhaps trying to thwart overall Bush administration control of all the branches of government, legislative, judicial, and executive. So from that point of view, political point of view, it's a tremendous tragedy, but it's also an enormous human loss for somebody 58 years old to be taken out of public life in such a tragic and sudden way, no matter when it took place and by what means, has to be viewed with tremendous shock and sadness. And I think a lot of us will be mourning this for quite some time.
Pacifica National Affairs Analyst Larry Bensky. U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone will be sorely missed by many Americans, particularly those in the progressive community. About 300 people gathered in Akron, Ohio yesterday to protest the White House plans for a war against Iraq. With temperatures hovering just above freezing and the dimming evening light, the spirited crowd of students and youth, senior citizens, veterans, and clergy expressed a number of objections to Bush's foreign military policy, ranging from concerns over the cost of the war to the U.S. economy to the injustice of threatening innocent lives both in Iraq and here at home. Evan Davis reports.
We must stand and use this moment to fight injustice, to fight what Eisenhower called the military-industrial police complex, because it is indeed what we see happening before our very eyes. We fight against the criminalization of Arab and African and poor communities in the name of terrorism and democracy, because we know the fallacy of that. We stand today against those who would spend more money on a military than they would on education, housing, care medications for elderly combined. Martin Luther King reminded us that silence is betrayal. Either we are for justice or we are against justice. There is no middle ground. There is no middle road. There is no sitting on the fence. We either are on one side or the other. We are either for the people or we are against the people. We understand that those bombs that we are trying to send to Iraq will come back to this country as bombs of resistance and opposition to this illegal war. This is just the beginning. And we must be ready. We must be ready for a protracted, long-term struggle, because we know, as communities of color and oppressed communities, what war means. And as poor Europeans in this country, we understand what war is about, because we will be the ones on the front line. Our brothers will be the ones on the front line fighting this illegal war. So we got to stand together. We got to. But we know that students globally were the fulcrum that made corrective measures in society possible. It happened in Cuba. It happened in Vietnam. It happened in China. It happened in Korea. And you know what? In this country, during the 1960s, it was students that took to the street to make this country live in world. Look for truth. This is the hour. Stand for justice. Fight the power.
Congressional Representative Sherrod Brown was also on hand. He was part of the Ohio delegation in the Congress, which voted against Bush's war resolution.
A majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives, including all six from Ohio, voted against giving the president the authority to unilaterally attack Iraq. We caution the president should go slow. He should work with the United Nations. We should pursue the policy of containment and deterrence and collective security and diplomacy that we used without invading the Soviet Union, without invading communist China, without going into Havana. It's worked for 10 years with him, with Saddam Hussein, an evil man, and we should do aggressive and thorough inspections to make sure to dispose of and to make sure he either doesn't have the weapons or we dispose of those that are there. But it needs to be done as part of the community of nations. The U.S. has too often gone it alone in the last year and a half, pulling out of ABM, pulling out of the International Criminal Court, pulling out of Kyoto, not signing landmine treaties, all the kinds of things that have caused the U.S. not to be leaders in the world, but when you're the only one out there and you look behind and there's nobody to lead, it's a long-term problem for our country. People in my district who wrote me, 28 to 1, and I wrote about 1,000 letters and calls, about 28 to 1 ratio against, and I'm convinced while that may not represent a cross-section of people in my district, a district that George Bush carried in the presidential election, it surely indicates, as my conversations and speeches and talks and discussions around my district indicate, that people don't want this war.
Akron, Ohio is not far from the campus of Kent State University, where in May of 1970, another anti-war protest ended in tragedy. I spoke with a Vietnam veteran at the Akron protest who had this to say.
Again, I have to say, when I walked up here, I was looking around for the National Guard. I was thinking about May 4th, 1970, so I that's still in my memory.
You're talking about the National Guard shootings of students at Kent State.
Right. They died like a lot of Vietnam veterans did, needlessly. It was not fair. Those were young people. And, you know, they're gone. They stood for what they believed in, and I think you guys are doing the same thing today.
I also spoke with longtime Akron area activist Kathy Felty, who's a professor of sociology at Akron State University. What is public sentiment running around here? I mean, it's a small town, but this is a pretty big turnout, isn't it? About 250 to 300 people, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
How is that for Akron? I mean, what does that indicate about Akron's feelings in general about the war?
You know, I am so impressed with the turnout. I did not expect this many people. But what we've noticed, because there's actually been folks who have been gathering every Friday for over a year now since 9/11 downtown in front of the federal building, and what we've noticed is people becoming much more responsive to the group who's out there protesting, honking in friendly ways instead of unfriendly ways. So I think there's actually been a shifting of sentiment. I think people are really afraid, and I think it says a lot about us as a community that we're willing to come together and make this statement publicly.
A number of people who attended yesterday's rally in Akron will be attending this weekend's rallies in both Cleveland, Ohio, and the large national rally in Washington, D.C., and many are gearing up for a statewide anti-war rally in Columbus, Ohio, on Saturday, November 9th. For Pacifica Radio's Peace Watch, this is Evan Davis in Akron, Ohio.
While hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens are voicing their opposition to the impending war with Iraq, Saeed Khaddin, an Iraqi, spoke at the Labor Against the War Organizing Conference last weekend in New York. We were there.
Assalamu alaikum. A greeting from the other part of the oceans, from the Mesopotamia, from the cradle of civilization, from Iraq, from the birthplace of Abraham. So we are unique. We have the history, we have the culture, and we have the religion. And think that's what makes us unique. Iraq, before 90, it used to be called the Oasis of the Middle East. It's all green. It's got the largest population of palm trees. We have 30 million palm trees in Iraq. Education in Iraq was one of the best in the whole area of the Middle East. You go to college in Iraq, not only it's free, you got paid Iraqi dinars there. I was paid 10 Iraqi dinars when I was at the University of Baghdad. And the Arab students or students from neighboring countries, you got to pay 20 Iraqi dinars. At that time, the Iraqi dinars were 3.5 American dollars. Now the American dollars, 2,000 Iraqi dinars. That's how the economy back home now. Health, we have the best health system in the Middle East. People from all over the area used to come to Iraq to take care of their health problems. Hospitals all over the places. It's free. Pharmacies all filled with any kind. Most complicated operation was done in Iraq. Now Iraqis lack the basic medicine. Children dying of diarrhea, sewage all over the place, and there is a hidden disaster in Iraq now called cancer. There is no family in Iraq that there is no one or two or three of their family members has a cancer. I lost people. Dr. Altai has two of his families have cancer. My friend, his sister died of cancer. This is a hidden thing. And the reason? Depleted uranium that the Americans throw on our people. 1990. So the economy, the education, the health. There was a saying in Arabic that Egyptians write the books, Lebanese print them, Iraqis read them. So we do value education. Iraq now in a very, very serious, devastating conditions. They say Iraq harboring a big mass for weapons of mass destruction. Iraq has been under sanction for 12 years. Iraq in 1990 was hit by 110,000 assaults of bombs. A country is cut into three pieces, no-fly zone in the south, no-fly zone in the north, and then the water's all totally, totally blocked. How could a country like that, under this economic sanction, can rebuild their chemical or biological nuclear weapons? Are the Iraqis our superiors? So why is the war? Iraq is a threat to its neighbor. None of these neighbors wants to go into war with Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Iran. None of them wants to go into war. They're opposing the war. And Iraq invaded one neighbor. America invaded every single neighbor next to them, from Haiti to Grenada to Panama to everywhere. The only people they didn't invade is Canada because they're white like them.
We did invade Canada.
Well, that was a long time ago. That's a long time ago. Mexico. Now, why Iraq? So we don't really have any weapons of mass destruction. I'm telling you that not because I only know that. I not even hear it from people in the middle of everything, but they don't have it. They have a weapon to defend themselves because everybody have their own eyes on Iraq to get a piece of part of that beautiful little place there. Turkey is sitting there, wants to have northern Iraq. Iran wants to have a part of Iraq. The south wants to be separated, and everybody wants to have a piece of that country. The oil. Till now, there is an Iraqi oil in the American market. Until this moment now. And the Iraqis, when are going to make an ice cream over their oil? They're going to sell it to you guys. So don't worry about the oil. You'll have the oil as much as you want. It's on the house, too. Human rights. We have the biggest prisoner population in America here. We have 2 million people in the prisons here. It's a McCarthyism here. But you don't have to be a communist. All you have to be an olive skin and your name is Saad to be in jail. Or Mustafa or Muhammad. This is the human rights that we have here. And what do you want for Iraq after this? After they're going to invade Iraq with this new doctrine of preemptive strike? They're going to install a military regime in Iraq led by Frank, what's his name, Frankie, whatever his name, Tommy Frank. Do you think that the Iraqis really will let that happen to them? Do you think it's going to be a picnic for them to go to Iraq and to invade that country? Iraq going to fight them because of the love of Saddam Hussein, because they're going to fight them because of the love of their own country and their own soil. So what is it about the Americans? Is it obsession with Saddam Hussein, with Iraq? Is it the policy to invert the policy, the problems we have inside in our own backyard here? So we have to find guinea pig to pick on. Is a big bully taking over the small bully? Is it really oil? Is it to protect Israel? Where do we stand here? Now, we're talking about the Iraq plight. We're talking about our government here. We're talking about the people who put in power to use their power, but they've been told not to use the power to stay in power in the Congress. The message is from here, from us, from the mass people. If we don't put our differences back away, if we don't unite together, if we don't stand together to save America, these people taking America to war, to devastation. We have to be true to ourselves. April 20th was a great event. It was a wonderful event. But how do we build on that? How to go from there? And where to go from there? How effective can we be as people, as masses, as working class people? Are we going to march together and try to educate each other together? Or are we going to go to the mass media? I have a son 14 years old in Albany yesterday. He said, Dad, we're trying to organize people in my school. We don't have money to take buses to Washington, D.C. I told him, I'll pay for the half of the bus. Get your friends together. There are people there ready to hear us. There are people there ready to get organized. But we have to be there for them to tell them what we're going to do for them, why it's important for them to get involved, and why now. We are the people of conscience. We are the leader of this movement. And we have to stand to our responsibility. And if we don't, nobody's going to help us. Nobody's gone for us. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This speech was produced by Reem Kathuta, Fred Nguyen, and Tom Gomez from WBIX.org Refugees Radio for Pacifica's Peace Watch. In today's segment on the spiritual response to the impending war on Iraq, we speak with the Minister of Metaphysical Teachings, the Reverend Dr. Carolyn Boyd of the Spirit of Truth Center in Washington, D.C. Dr. Boyd says that war should be the absolute last resort to resolving conflicts, and she spoke of the role karma plays in our lives.
There are many ways we can look at this, and I'm going to talk spiritually. I want to talk about, you know, the law of karma and the law of cause and effect. And in the Eastern world, these are very accepted concepts, and people live their lives daily through them. In our society, and particularly in our culture, these are not concepts that we either embrace or understand. So I want to speak to it.
Okay, so karma is basically the belief that a soul is reincarnated and carries with it baggage from one life to the next, and must therefore balance out those deeds between lifetimes. So an individual is basically, or if an individual is seen as a victim in this life, it may be as a result of some sort of deeds or actions that he
could
very
well be.
It
could very well
be.
Karma is the actions that one has taken and the consequences and choices of those actions. They carry with us lifetime after lifetime. We all think that we're only born once, but we in fact live many, many lives. And each of these lives carry with us the history and the experiences of those lives. So if I consider myself a good person, and if I walk out of the studio today and I am struck either by a sniper or by, you know, robbed in some way, then I have to say that in my true belief system that perhaps something in my energy and my karma contributed to me having that experience. Had nothing to do with the person who did it, but it is what I earned through the lifetimes of my experiences. Now, this is a hard truth and very difficult for us to come to grips with. Mm-hmm. But yet, karma has a life, has a history, and it follows us lifetime after lifetime.
So what we're seeing, one could extrapolate from that, what we're seeing in terms of the President Bush wanting to go to war against Iraq, against Saddam Hussein, is there a karmic connection in your opinion there?
I believe in many regards, absolutely, because part of, you know, what is playing out here are larger commitments and agreements that we all make as we come back to life, as we reincarnate into various personalities and into our various lives. And an outpicturing of us coming back to this planet at this time are certain agreements and certain contracts that we play out one with the other. So Mr. Bush and Mr. Saddam Hussein and all of the administration and even you and I, we're all playing out our particular roles and agreements that we've contracted to play out in this life that is designed to teach us very powerful lessons. So
that's the divine plan that is often referred to?
In many regards, you could say it is a plan. It is a plan in the sense that we have agreed to further develop our souls and to further develop who we are as spiritual beings. And sometimes the plan calls for what we would deem tragic circumstances to befall us. Sometimes it requires that we participate in wars. But that has not to do with God in the sense that God is causing these things to happen. It has everything to do with our choices lifetime after lifetime where we perceived ourselves to be separated from God.
So if this is all some sort of karmic contract outplaying or outpicturing, then we should just let it roll? Or as metaphysicians, do we have a role to play in all of this?
I think we do have a role to play. We have an important role to play. And no, we can't just sit back and allow the picture to unfold. But we do so in a way that supports God's divinity, allowing God to play God's hand out in a very divine and merciful way. I think what we have to do is to pray without ceasing. We have to be peaceful in our own energies. So many people today are violent and angry and fearful, and I want to take this opportunity to say that that exact energy does not help the healing of our planet. It does not help us be peaceful. And so the more fearful and violent we are, then we allow that fear and that violence to become a part of the consciousness of our planet that further drives the violence. So as a spiritual person, I would like to suggest that we find ways to be peaceful in our own individual energies, that we find ways to be loving, we find ways to be forgiving and tolerable, and could we not find ways to pray for our enemies? Mm-hmm. Could we not find a way to pray for the Palestinians, to pray for the Muslims, to pray for Saddam, to pray for whomever this nation has deemed an enemy of the state? That is the true outpicturing of the teachings of Jesus the Christ that our great country has founded itself off of. So in some ways, we've got to step into that truth. And as Jesus said, we must pray and forgive how many times? 70 times 70. So if we want to really affect a different outcome, if we want to really change the direction that we're headed so that we don't go into war, that we create peace and peaceful states, then we need to pray and be peaceful in our energies. And at the same time, we need to do the actions that our personality guide us to do. So if that means calling your senator or your congressman and voting no and telling them how you're feeling, that's all a part of the human experience and all very necessary. But what we must not do is contribute to the violent by being violent ourselves.
The Reverend Dr. Carolyn Boyd is minister of the Spirit of Truth Center in Washington, D.C. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our engineer today was Rolando Arrieta. We had editing help from Reem Kadhuta. Our consultants are Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. We had production assistance today from Jim Bennett of KPFA, David Russo of the D.C. Independent Media Center, and Tom Gomez of WBIX.org, Refugees Radio. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and WebActive.com for web help. Thanks also today to the Pacifica Radio Archives. We'd like to wish a special thank you and farewell today to our engineer, Rolando Arrieta, as he moves on to new endeavors. We wish him the best of luck. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at pacificaarchives.org or calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. A reminder that Pacifica Radio will be broadcasting live on Saturday, October 26th from the anti-war rallies in Washington, D.C. and San Francisco. If you plan on attending a peace rally in your neighborhood, please email us at your cell phone number. That address once again is peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown for Peace Watch. Thank you for listening. Thank you.